Welcome to the Mystery Stone Podcast. I am that guy, CJ, here with
Mike again once more.
Hey, how's it going, Mike? How are you doing today?
I'm doing just great. How are you doing, CJ?
I'm doing wonderful. In fact, I am doing amazing because today we have an amazing special guest with us.
Yes, yes.
Author Leandra Witchwood, herbalist, author of Witchcraft for Beginners, Magic in the Kitchen, 13 Essential Spells. She's a master herbalist and a Reiki master. And she does a lot of talks, various groups, and actually runs her own coven. Leandra, thank you for being here with us today.
I am so happy to be here. I'm honored, really. Like, oh, I love the intro. Makes me feel so important, but really it's just me. Like,
yeah, well, you definitely seem to be pretty seasoned. You have like a lot of the stuff down. Yeah. From the coven to the herbs. So this, yeah,
we joke that between my coven mates and I, like, we're all knowledge whores. You want to use that? we're knowledge junkies. That's what we are. We're knowledge junkies. We love to learn and explore. And to me, that's what this path is about. It's always learning, always discovering, always, you know, exploring different things. So that's why I have all these credentials.
Yeah, that's great. That's also kind of similar to me. Like, my room is filled with books and all different types of religion. Spiritual books and this and that. I mean, like, to me, there's like truth in a lot of different paths.
Absolutely.
And alleyways, so, you know what I mean? But yeah, that's good to hear that.
I don't have whole bookshelves myself, but fun little trivia about CJ. My very first book on witchcraft was actually Witchcraft for Beginners by Leandra Witchwood.
Yes, oh, it was. Wow.
Isn't that convenient?
It's very convenient.
which actually, I did read that book in preparation for this podcast, and I have to say, like, honestly, it's a really comprehensive, really good introduction to the overall witchcraft. Like, I was involved in the topic in high school, like, you know, Wicca and stuff and pagan stuff. A lot of stuff people traditionally get into, like, right away. And, you know, since then, I've abandoned that certain type of path, like, and directly towards that way, and I've went other ways in the magical realms and spirituality. Mm-hmm. But, like, coming back to it and reading that book, I mean, it's definitely a really comprehensive book. So that, even to the viewers, even to the listeners, it's definitely an essential book, I'd say, that I've stumbled across. For the whole topic of witchcraft. It's very comprehensive.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, because that was, you know, my attempt to help educate, because I think that's what my role has become on this path, is the educator, the teacher, the mentor. And yeah. I reflect that in my blog, in my books, and in the coven I teach. And it's one of those things where I wanted everyone who read that book to get a good idea of what it meant. What does magic mean? What does practicing mean? What does it mean to call yourself a witch? And I too started in the whole Wiccan realm. And coming from a very Christian background, stepping into that was it was freeing, but it was also anxiety filled.
Yes.
You know, and to come full circle to where I am now in what I know and understand now, it's a wonderful thing to be able to express that to others. And then, you know, thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you, you know, giving me the feedback on that book as being comprehensive, because that was my goal. I wanted anybody who reads that book to understand that this path is so vast and it's so personal, and that's what it's about. It's about making it yours.
I definitely relate to that. A good thing about that book, Witchcraft for Beginners, is very comprehensive. Like, it doesn't like tell the practitioner or someone who wants to go into it like a certain thing that you have to do. Like, it shows you different avenues, different people who are like prominent in the area, you know, just different paths, different type of traditions, you know. It's very comprehensive. So, and I also understand what it's like, because I was raised in a Christian, a very, very Christian and Catholic background as well. Venturing off of that path, even to this day, everything I know, like, there's still like a subconscious brainwashing that I had growing up from a young kid.
Yeah.
I thought like Christianity and Jesus and God and like magic's being terrible and bad and evil, which, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a human being. I can't say it ultimately. I mean, it doesn't feel like it is, but I definitely understand like the anxiety of venturing off the path. And entering the metaphysical world. Yeah, it's definitely a different thing.
Yeah.
So what initially drew you to your niche involving like dragon witchcraft and kitchen magic?
Honestly, I think it was always there with me. I just didn't recognize it. Like I said, I grew up in a very Christian background. I was even a missionary for a few years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was out there proselytizing. I was out there you know, absorbing everything that was taught to me and then regurgitating. And I use the term regurgitating. I don't like to be negative in that aspect, but my experience from the Christian church was very negative. Everything they taught me was very exclusive, very hate-filled. If they're not with us, they're against us. And I'm seeing a lot of that in our political climate right now. It's manifesting in a big way of what was being taught to me as a child. And I think witchcraft, kitchen witchcraft, dragon magic, and my dragon guides, they were always there. I just wasn't allowed to recognize them. And I remember when I was very young, I was about, my brother died when I was 9. So it was about 9.
Late. Oh, sorry to hear that.
It was almost 10. And every year I would go off to this Christian summer camp. We would be there for about 2 weeks. And previous years, like I remember them, they would always invite everyone up to pray. And some would slip into the trance of speaking in tongues. And I never thought that was anything that I would ever be a part of. So usually during those sessions, I would just leave and go back to our cabin or do whatever recreation they had available. But after my brother died, I went up. Something drew me to go up. And I sat on the floor there and I began praying. And all of a sudden I was taken over by this energy, this massive energy. And I remember speaking to my dead brother. I remember him telling me it's all good. It's okay. This is not the path you're supposed to be on, but you'll get there. And he was just very comforting. And apparently in my trance state, I was speaking Chinese. I don't know Chinese. Maybe in a past life somewhere I was Chinese, but it was that spiritual experience, you know? Yeah, it's one of those things where you don't know where your soul has been, really. Because I'm kind of dirty, right?
And that to me is honestly a big source of anxiety to me. Like where's the soul come from? Like, what's it going to experience? Like, what's going to happen? Like, you know?
But yeah, for sure. Yeah. So coming out of that big experience, it was massive experience where, you know, you're sobbing and your eyes hurt because you're crying, your cheeks hurt because you're talking, your body hurts because you're clenching and feeling and absorbing all this massive spiritual energy. And coming out of that and going to my spiritual leaders in the church and explaining to them what happened and then being dismissed and discredited was a horrible experience. And I think that young, that was my guides trying to direct me. But of course, I'm too young to be directed. You know, I still have to follow the rules of the house. I have to follow the rules of my parents. So it was a long time in, you know, going into being a missionary, going into really digging deep into the church and buying into their messages. And it wasn't until I was probably about 16, 17. When something just woke up inside of me and I saw my church from my personal experience, what it was hypocrisy. It was condemnation. It was the hate everybody, but only love the people next to you in the pew type of atmosphere. It was very negative. And I started questioning that. And I started asking questions that my pastors did not like. You know, the one question I you know, reflect on that it makes me chuckle to this day because I find some truth in it still, is they would always say to me, well, you know, the devil is very clever. He'll make you think that this is right and what you're doing is right. And in reference to me speaking in tongue and being able to connect to spirit like that. And I would constantly draw dragons for some reason, doodling them anywhere I was, anywhere I could get a pencil and paper together in the sand, even, I would draw them. And they never had angry faces. They always had kind faces, which is something that a friend of mine pointed out back then. So it had me questioning, well, okay, so if the devil is so clever and he's going to make, you know, us think that that XYZ path is so great and so appealing and right, what makes you think, Mr. Pastor, what makes you think that what you're teaching me right now, all the hate and exclusivity, is not the work of the devil? And they did not like that.
Yeah, and that's the thing evolving that. Like, you know, for me, I respect all the holy texts, and I have many Bibles myself, and I was raised Catholic, and I went to the church, and, you know, but for me, it's just how human beings handle it, you know. There's a lot of ignorance involved in just humanity in general, and when they take something just the Bible, you know, and you take something like as an organized structure of thought, and you put them all together, it becomes just that, just like cookie cutter type of mentality about how the world is, and it becomes less spiritual and more us versus them, exactly how you're saying.
Yes.
And like you said, like, who knows whether like the devil's in the Bible taking people as followers and making them have this schism between people like us versus them, or the devil's involved in areas that we're involved in, and they're taking us away from the truth. It's like, at the end of the day, like nobody truly, like, we're not some God, like who knows? Like,
right,
it should be what feels right for the person without causing problems between everybody else. So yeah, like I had the exact same experience with you, in the church, growing up in the church, until 16. So yeah, I could definitely relate to that.
Absolutely. And I have friends who are Christian who are absolutely accepting. My mother-in-law is a wonderful example. She's Roman Catholic. You know, they're hardcore.
Hardcore. Yeah, that's exactly where my family is.
And she is so accepting of my path. You know, she just was here 30 minutes ago, and she bought me a cute little witch hat. You know, she
does. Oh, wow.
You know, she is so accepting of it. So it's not everybody. You know, I can't make a broad sweeping statement, but in my experience, that's how it was. And that's what really launched me towards exploring where I am now. And I think the kitchen witchery really comes from my mom. I really think she was a kitchen witch without labeling it as such.
Yeah.
She had this amazing ability to go into the kitchen, whip up the most magnificent meal out of the most meager items, and feed. She could feed 20 people in the blink of an eye. And so I think she really taught me the magic of ingredients and recipes and putting it all together. So those two combinations from my childhood, I think, have always been there, and they've just kind of followed me through, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And with food, like, a lot of people don't realize that food is intended to be like a medicine to begin with, you know, like the nutrients involved, especially if it's natural or herbal. And then you have like the smells, the scents, the textures, the colors that make them up, you know, like the whole atmosphere involved. Food is something that we're supposed to, you know, we're injecting it into us to become who we are. And I think a lot of people have lost touch with that that sense of nature because of, you know, fast food, all types of processed food and all that stuff in this hyper-competitive world.
Yeah.
But something that you said real quick I want to inquire about is you had mentioned like that trance state where you're speaking in tongues or the Chinese language. Can you explain to me like what it felt like to be under the influence of that energy? Like, can you tell, like, the visceral feelings, the mental feelings, like, were you conscious of like speaking, like, or did just was like naturally just flowing out? Like,
it's intense. That's the best way I can.
Okay.
I know everybody experiences it differently when you channel or when you, when you're in the presence of spirit and you're channeling spirit for you. Some people can take it. I don't want to say it that way, because I don't want to make it seem like, you know, some people are stronger than others. It's not the case. Some spirits that come through are more intense than others. And for some reason, the connection I have, I tend to channel really big energy. And people who are able to speak in tongue, who are able to connect with the spirit like that, it's not something you're trying to do. It just happens. And you can learn over time how to control it, how to not temper it, maybe temper it a little bit. Because I still do it with the dragon energy that comes through. So when I channel, it's a big thing. But I also know people who channel who just, you know, they can just, you know, they receive a message and they can process the message and send the message through. Like, just like with being psychic or clairvoyant, you know, you have clairaudient, you have, you know, all these different types and styles, and they all function a little differently. So when I experience it, I don't remember anything. I don't know what's going on. Usually I'm put in a place. It's almost like my spirit is like picked up and put over into this little area that's nice and safe and it's quiet. And, you know, it's almost like I go to not asleep, but I'm content for a few minutes or for an hour or so or however long.
You just are. You're just existing, right?
Yeah. I just completely become that conduit. And it's intense and it's scary. And I know, like, in Wiccan traditions, they often will teach having a summoner there when in those experiences. And I still continue with that practice. It's one of those things where I don't allow myself to let go to allow the experience unless I know somebody is there with me who can help regulate that energy, because it's so powerful and so intense that I don't want to take too much. It's self-care is what it boils down to. So you have to take care of yourself, because your body becomes that gateway, that conduit. And if you're not able to release that energy that comes through, it's funny because we just had this conversation with a couple of my coven mates today, because she had an experience. And, you know, we were talking about it. And it's like, it's a process. You learn how to deal with it. And everybody is different. You know, it's a very gentle experience. They're very conscious during the process. And then there's, you know, people like me who completely black out. So.
Yeah. I feel there's also like the spiritual experiences that, you know, depending on who someone's inclinations might be, like say if someone's more like emotional based, maybe a spirit might make them feel certain types of emotions more strongly or accepted, or if someone's more prone to visualizations, they might appear to a person like visually. Yeah. I'm sure there's probably different experiences people will have with channeling.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely a common thing to hear it being a very powerful experience.
Very powerful, yes.
Very cool that you have that. But yeah. But yeah, no good.
I mean, all right. So that being said, I'm really curious to know how do you define magic? What does that mean to you? Like, what has it brought to your life?
Oh my gosh! Like, to me, magic is indefinable. It is in our. I can't articulate it properly. But
it's the same, right?
It's everything and nothing at all, if that makes any sense. It's that knowledge that everything has its place, everything has its cycle, everything has its own divine power, but then yet you have this divine power over here that you can tap into. And to me, magic is that connection to the natural world and the other world, or the ethereal. It is that process of learning who you are, your authenticity, and getting yourself into balance. So doing your shadow work, doing your daily practices that connect you with divinity. And it's that pure energy, that raw energy, that amazing energy that all of a sudden everything just clicks and you're able to manifest easily. You're able to, you know, go into risky situations, or not risky, but maybe questionable situations or nerve-wracking situations, difficult situations. And you're able to summon something from within and without that pushes you through and helps you through. It's almost like an old friend. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think what it put as well is like it's like magic becomes a thing. I often don't really like the term magic too much. You know, sometimes it's a good way to describe it, because it's something that most people really can't understand the mechanics of everything and the energy involved and the connections between the true self and the outer world and all these things. I think magic is like a digging deep into one's actual essence, learning its connections to the universal essence, like realizing how it's attached and incorporating the corporeal and incorporeal aspects of existence and learning how to manage them, and also channeling things to and from the two realities, which are, you know, interconnected, learning how to like manipulate the physics and electromagnetic field and all the different types of things that embody that in the process. But yeah, it's definitely a really complicated term to actually like describe, you know, without being too superficial.
Yeah. Well, and I think what in our current perception as humans, the spirit within us knows everything, or the spirit within us can tap into it effortlessly. But because we're spirits having that human experience, because we can only perceive things with our human eyes, our human ears, our human brain, that we only get those snippets. We get that teeny tiny bit of knowledge. And it's up to us to define and interpret that knowledge that we get. And I think that's what makes magic so personal, because it's so different for everybody. You know, you're not going to, my version of magic is not going to be the same as even someone in my coven, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like definitely a personalized path, you know, but that all, it all stems from just, you know, learning the essence of the self and everything like that, and following the true path. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are kind of afraid to venture beyond the illusionary world. Like, a lot of people are kind of meshed in the world and its illusions and everything like that. And the preconceived constructs that we're being taught by the masses. And then if one has like a thought that counters that, they start to think maybe they're crazy, or they're having like some type of injection from the universe, like some like crazy metaphysical thoughts, and then they start to think they're going crazy. Mm-hmm. And then it scares them. And since there's no one to relate to these, they kind of repress it, and they go along with the construct that they've been enmeshed in for so long. But when you really start to dig deep into yourself and meditate and do the shadow work and see the wounds you have or see what makes you up, see how your subconscious rules your life without you being in control of it, it's definitely a scary, dark world at first. And it can be along the way, the entire way. But I think it's one of bravery and of courage. And I totally understand why a lot of people wouldn't even know where to start, or even why a lot of people wouldn't even want to keep adventuring there, especially if you're alone in the process.
And definitely. And you touched on that idea of, you know, that boundary between sanity and insanity. You have to walk that tightrope, and sometimes that tightrope is only as thick as a spider's web, and you really have to balance yourself. And that's why we do the shadow work. That's why we, you know, dig deep and know ourselves and find our authenticity, because if we, you know, stray too far, then we either end up in madness, or we end up in, you know, the glowing screen intoxication, where we're just drowning out everything that, you know, might be of value.
Yeah. Yeah. A quote that came to me a while ago, that I really kind of liked in terms of like this general idea, is like, genius lies on the threshold between sanity and insanity.
Yeah.
And I kind of find like when you're really engulfed in the world, you know, you could feel like really, you know, grounded, sane, good to go. But when you start to really think they're like, start to channel things metaphysically, you might start to feel insane. But it's like learning to tie the two together in the two worlds, and how to correlate the two. And, you know, the hermetic statement, as above, so below, and is a good indicator analogy between channeling or seeing things from the known and the unknown, and seeing the whole together. But it's definitely a lot. Like, I don't know if you've gone through a lot of periods where you felt like you're going crazy.
Oh, yeah.
like psychotic episodes, possibly think you're schizophrenic in the meantime. Like, I don't know if that's something you've experienced.
Okay, I will tell you a story.
I personally go through this all the time. Like, so.
Okay, so one of my teachers is Orion Foxwood, and when I first started practicing with him, we were doing fairy work, and he helped us open a portal and connect and all that stuff. So that night, as we are all like sitting around the fire and we're, you know, chatting and stuff like that, all of a sudden I see these little tiny guys. They looked like tree stumps with legs, and they were excited. They were happy. They were running around. They were jumping. They were, you know, jumping over each other. Like, they were playing. And I'm looking around at these beings going, what is happening? Like, I thought I was legitimately going insane.
Am I good? Did you lace my drink with LSD? Like, what's going on here, man?
Exactly. And, you know, I had to be reassured, because I legitimately thought I was going nuts. And I will be upfront with you. Like, I do not do any hallucinogenics. I don't do drugs. I don't do anything that's altering, except for maybe some wine and or some ginger beer every once in a while, you know?
Yeah, that's probably a good thing. You probably wandered way too far on the astral. You probably get stuck there.
And I think that's why I don't do that stuff, because... For me, it's a ritual. Like, if you're going to do that, it's a ritual. You need to have somebody watching over you, and it needs to be a controlled environment. It's not recreation. It's not fun. It's something that you're doing for a spiritual purpose. That's, you know, the only time I would ever, and this certain instance, we were not doing anything. We were just sitting around drinking tea and stuff. We weren't even, you know, doing anything super fun. So,
yeah, and they just started popping up.
Like they just started popping up. And it was because we opened that portal and, you know, not everybody could see them, but I was validated. So that's all I needed, right? I just, oh my God, I'm not crazy.
Yeah, at that point, I probably started questioning everything. It's like, okay, what's going on? Like, who are you, man? Like, where are we at? What's going on here? Like,
and ironically, it's also the same weekend that my patron dragon deity came to me. And that's another fun story.
Okay.
You want to hear it?
Yeah. Okay. What?
Yeah, of course.
Because one of the questions we went to get to eventually was like, just, you know, like an overview of like the attributes of your patron gods and goddesses, and maybe like what your relationship with them entails, you know?
Yeah.
Like, on those lines.
Absolutely. We can go there now. And so this is story time. Gather around, boys and girls. Leandro's going to tell a story.
We're lighting the fire. We got the s'mores ready.
Yes. Get the hot chocolate ready and go.
Yep. Yeah, got the coffee, got the chocolate, we're good to go.
Nice. So at the same retreat, we were in a big barn, and there were probably about 30 of us in this big barn, and part of the workshop was on how to raise energy and how to direct energy. And the teacher was directing us through a final exercise on raising some energy to help heal the planet. So we're all in a circle, we're all meditating on this energy, we're raising this energy. Feel it. It's getting, you know, your skin's prickling. It's really getting intense. And all of a sudden, in front of me is this giant, beautiful white dragon with these crystal blue eyes. And he's just staring at me. And I'm like, I'm talking about it right now, and my hair is standing up. It's amazing. So he's staring at me, and I'm like, what is happening right now? So I'm staring at him. He's staring at me. And I'm kind of looking around. Nobody else is paying attention because they're in their own little world doing what we're supposed to be doing with the exercise, right?
Yeah, just back on Earth. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this dragon gives me a smirk like, and pushes right through me. Literally knocks me on my butt. I'm sitting on my butt looking around at everybody. My heart's racing. My hands are shaking. I'm sweating. I can't catch my breath, and he's gone. He was just gone.
And you're saying you saw like it's like a physical manifestation,
like right in front of me. It, from the swirling energy that we were creating to heal the earth, he spiraled right out of it, right in front of my face. And this day, I can close my eyes and I see his face. I see him all the time because he's my patron, and it was amazing. But I was not prepared for that energy. And I couldn't ground it out. I literally went outside. I crawled my butt outside onto the grass. And I laid there with my face in the grass and my hands on the grass, trying to ground out this massive energy that just pushed through me. And nobody else knew I was gone. And my friend who was there with during that weekend, we were camping together. She came through and she was about ready to call an ambulance because she thought I was having a heart attack. But you know, eventually I got the energy to go through and to, you know, push it down to the ground. Like, come on, get out.
Like, no, it's the dragon, dude. Give me a second, man.
Dragons are intense.
Yeah, it sounds wild. Yeah. There's I wish I had an experience with that. Yeah, that's cool.
It was amazing. And to this day, like, we work together still. And he's always had that sense of humor about him. Like, watch me do this, you know?
So what's it? So I guess it's like, like it's a masculine energy.
Yes, he's a masculine energy, and dragons are usually very secretive about their names and where they're from. But when I saw a picture of Pei Lung, the Chinese storm dragon, that's him. That's him.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh.
Okay, yeah, because I was going to ask if there was like a name that that you could provide for it. So I guess you're relating it to that Chinese dragon.
Pei Lung, yeah, and he is amazing. Wow. And I've asked him before, like, is that your name? And he's like, yeah, maybe.
It's like, ah, damn it. You found me out, dude.
Damn it.
But yeah, so like your two biggest niches are like dragon magic and kitchen style magic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And And how would you define kitchen magic to someone who's never really heard it before?
Okay, well, kitchen magic is basically, it's the most, I want to say one of the most primal types of magic, because it's literally feeding yourself with spirit. So you're taking your ingredients, you're taking, you know, your vegetables, your herbs, your meats, your yogurt, everything, and you're taking these raw ingredients and putting them into a delicious meal to feed yourself physically, to feed your soul, to feed a need. So to me, that's it's about the ingredients. It's about the processing of the ingredients. So kitchen magic to me is just, it's so simple, but yet so profound, if that makes sense. You know, each time you chop something, you're going into your meditation and you're focusing on your purpose. And, you know, it's healing physically and emotionally.
Yeah, so I guess it's kind of using like it's kind of using food for what it's supposed to be used for, and also putting your energy and positive intention in it and aid in its goal of whatever you're trying to use it for, right? Yep. Something along those lines. Yeah, that's very interesting. Okay,
so you know, with that being said, a lot of us, even necessarily myself right now, we spend sometimes months or even years of when we first start trying to figure out like what is our path and. And where are we headed, and what does this mean to us? If, for somebody who is going to possibly participate in kitchen magic, what sort of traits and like spiritual associations could a person look into themselves and go, kitchen magic is right for me? Like, what would draw them to that craft?
Mm. Well, I think first you have to enjoy cooking. You have to enjoy recipes and ingredients. For me, it's mostly about the ingredients, because I look at it this way. Your quality of magic is going to be determined by the quality care you take in what you're doing. Look at our situation now in food, in the general scheme of things. Many Americans are very sick because of the food they eat. So if we feed ourselves better food, then we live better lives. I attribute that also to magic. If we take care with our magic and use our quality ingredients and take time to process the food with love and care and emotion, then we develop a better spell. We create a better ritual, and we create a better end product that nourishes us, not just our body, but our mind, our soul, our emotions. It gives us something to connect over with other people. So we're creating the social connections. And to me, that's what kitchen magic is about. It's about feeding your whole self, not just the grumbling belly, but feeding yourself. Yeah.
Good way to put it.
Yeah,
it's almost like becoming like one with your food, like understanding and having a relationship with it. So you can have a better relationship with your own body and how it impacts and affects it. So I guess like probably someone more inclined to better themselves, someone who, like you said, has inclinations of cooking, who I don't know, just someone who wants to better their life in a health way, I guess would be more interested in kitchen magic overall.
Yeah. And I really honestly believe that if you're going to do kitchen magic, I mean, go get your fresh ingredients, make sure they're top quality, you know, and it doesn't mean everything has to be organic, non-GMO all the time, but really pay attention to your ingredients. You know, if you can grow it yourself, grow it yourself. If you can go to a farmer's market and talk to the grower, do that and spend the time, really chop it. One of my daily rituals is mise en place. And if anybody knows anything about cooking the French style, that means in its place. So what the purpose, like if you ever watch a cooking show, like you see how they have all their little ingredients all segregated into these little bowls and stuff like that. They're all pre-measured and pre-chopped.
All nice and organized and beautiful looking. Yep. Yeah.
That's mise en place. Yep. Okay. And for me in magic, that's a ritual. You're putting things in their place. You're setting them up so that they can be utilized when you're ready to utilize them. So that is a ritual in itself. So when you're cutting, chopping, dicing, slicing, it's important to pay attention to that process, to allow it to be meditative, to allow it to to sink you into purpose of this meal, if that makes sense.
It's also really nice for when you're flying across that stove and opening the oven and getting to your electric skillet and everything's already ready to go.
Yeah.
Everything is on a time frame, and like you want it to come out at the right temperatures and the right consistencies at the right times. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of years in kitchens and ending my cooking career in a fine dining restaurant myself. I left that because I was having a child, and I was like, $9 an hour isn't covering this. So, but I still, to this day, in the 12 years, me and my wife have been together, she's never spent a day in that kitchen. Uh-huh. Like that is my domain.
Yeah, it's her domain. The tides are turning, man.
It's like eye-opening for me a little bit, because I love being in my kitchen. I've grown my own stuff in my own garden, and the lantern flies around here kind of ruined that for me recently. Mm-hmm. But I've also made the mistake of doing all kinds of grounding back there in the garden, and now it's a jungle that I can't control. pouring that energy into there.
But, yeah, just life. You know, oh my God.
No, it's horrible. And I got knotweed back there now. But, you know, as a cook, like if we're going to sit down and cook together, one of the first things that I want to see is your knife. You know,
yes!
Let me see your knife. So like the tools for me are like imperative. I have a knife for every separate situation, and I know what they're used for, and I know exactly what I want when I want it. How does that apply to kitchen magic, like your tools?
Oh, absolutely. I have Damascus steel knives, and those are some of the best knives you can buy. And why do I have them? Not because I need the best in my kitchen. Well, yeah, maybe I do. But no, because
the hair on my arm just stood up a little bit, and I'm a little bit jealous right now.
Are you okay?
I'm like a complete outsider of cooking here, so I'm like just okay. I'm on the bleachers.
But no, your tools are essential, because if you think about it, when you're in ritual, you want to put your best foot forward, because you're speaking to divinity right there. So if you're just, you know, pulling out the plastic, you know, cutlery, if it is in a pinch, of course, that's fine.
Yeah.
But when you're making an everyday ritual, you want the tools you use, for one, you want them to be easy to use. So very sharp knives and good quality steel is going to help you. It's going to curb that fatigue that comes from chopping, slicing, and dicing. It's going to cut things very easily and very precisely, so that you're getting the same cuts all throughout your meal. So you're not having, you know, oh, look, a giant piece of potato that's uncooked and a little tiny piece of potato that's mushy, you know? And it's about precision. It's about making that process as easy as possible and giving yourself, you know, you don't want, aluminum pans that everything's going to stick to the bottom, because then you're fighting with your food, right? You want it to work with you. So yeah, your tools are going to be very important here.
I'm a cast iron snob. I really am.
I love cast iron. Yes, I do.
and I'll tell you what, there is nothing worse than trying to chiffonade spinach with a dull chef's knife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I guess the tools, and like even having better tools, better quality tools, mm-hmm. and adequate tools kind of add respect to the food, or like, kind of adds like the art form of the whole magic area, and like making like a hearty meal. I'm assuming just kind of like a magic, if you like formulate or create your own tools, like say like a wand or whatever it is, like with your own energy and with your own intention, and you make it like nice instead of just throwing something together, and amplifies the effect of what you're trying to do.
Absolutely.
Yes. Into that.
And the ease of use is going to be critical too, because you're not fighting with whatever you're using. And since cooking requires that right timing and the right temperature, you want to make sure that your pots and pans are going to heat evenly. You want to make sure that your mixing bowls are big enough, that your whisk is adequate enough. And, you know, the idea of using different knives for different purposes, absolutely. You don't want to use a gigantic cleaver to to chop an onion or, you know, to cut some garlic.
Just I guess it kind of, it's just whatever makes it like less stressful, most respectful, and, you know, it's just most harmonious as possible mm-hmm. in the process.
Yeah. Every last one of us has tried to dice an onion with a big cleaver because we want to use the big one.
It's fun until it's all over the kitchen.
Yeah, right.
Until you grab the smaller one, you're like, oh, this is so much easier.
Yeah, I'm going to use the best one. All right, cool.
And for me, in ritual, I am a stickler for keep it simple, stupid. Like, don't overdo it. And I've been there. I've been in covens and in groups where everything had to be over the top and great. And it turns out great even when it's not over the top, because I found that I spent so much energy in the preparation that there's nothing left for the actual execution. So when you look at any tool you're going to use, from kitchen magic or just, you know, sitting in a circle in your yard and performing your ritual, you want things to be simple because you don't want to waste all your energy in the preparation and have nothing left for the execution.
Yeah, because like it's like overthinking things, you know, like or overthinking the ritual or the cooking process. Yeah, it mm-hmm. takes more energy. You kind of lose your focus and it drains your energy, adds to the stress. Yeah. So yeah, I could see how that would just not be a good ingredient. No pun intended.
Stress is not a good ingredient in any ritual.
No, it's not a good ingredient in your kitchen.
No, that's how you lose the tips of your fingers.
Oh yes. Yeah.
I've done that too.
Oh, not good.
They grow back. But you know, besides knives and like your tools in general, like what would be like if you were to open up your spice cabinet or like where you're storing your herbs, whether you're drying them yourself or you're keeping a sort of cooler to keep them fresh, like as somebody who's gonna be just starting out, what would we find in those areas, like for those ingredients?
Well, I have a blog post on my website on themagickitchen.com on, you know, it's 13 essential ingredients for beginner kitchen witches. And there's some basic stuff that I think people just completely gloss over or they just ignore because it's too basic, right? It can't be that easy, right? Magic can't be that easy, but it really can be. So like lemon, rosemary, lavender, sage, apples, even clove, allspice, like all of those are excellent beginner herbs. Like really just open any kitchen cabinet with, you know, your general spices and you can perform magic right there. Anything you have in there, from dill to allspice to, you know, even cumin, you know, you have everything in there and that's all you really need is those herbs. And you don't have to have anything special. You know, you don't have to go find these exotic herbs that can only be shipped in from exotic places. You can do a lot right there.
Yeah. And also, is there any like beginner, maybe like plates or things to create that people might want to start out if they're into this area? Or is that kind of personal, I'm assuming?
No. Like I said, my blog has tons of recipes. So there's so many on there. One I like to use is basil. Like basil is so easy because think about it. You're coming home from a hard day at work. It's been a long day. You're tired. You're stressed. You need to feed the family. You need to feed yourself. So but you also need to maybe manifest some prosperity or some peace in the household. So basil will absolutely do that for you. So what's a better, easier way than to, you know, boil some pasta and create a simple sauce using basil. You can make a pesto. You can just use olive oil and tomatoes and basil. And like all of those things, it's so simple. And I think that's why kitchen witchcraft gets overlooked a lot, because it's so simple, but it's extremely powerful because it is the hearth of the home.
Yeah, it's like some of the most powerful things are some of the most simplest.
They are.
Yeah, often overlooked. Yeah,
we talked about simple. We've talked about a little bit of complex, and we've talked about a whole lot of cooking. But you know, you're on the show, and we have to talk about tea.
Okay, I love tea.
Yeah. So you also fabricate and create a whole bunch of different teas, like herbal teas for remedies and stuff like that, right?
Yes, I do. I have teas for ceremony, and I have teas for wellness. I have teas for everyday drinking. I love tea. I love herbs. And my love for tea stemmed from my experience in the kitchen. And every blend that I make is my own blend. So I sit in here and I taste test and I tweak and I taste test and I tweak. And I have everything from right now what I'm drinking some of my tea right now is the Witch's Mind. And this is a cognitive tea for spell work, for just general focus, trying to keep yourself, you know, that brain fog, trying to keep that at bay.
Yeah, I need some of that.
I'm telling you, I needed this tea today.
All the time. Yeah, I'm about to go stop by real quick. Like,
well, I'm in my office, so feel free to stop by. All right. But I have teas with a little kick, like my Jasmine Dragon or my Dragon Fire tea. Those ones have a little bit of chili in them, and they're pleasant for waking up in the morning, or you know, if you have a little congestion or a little sore throat, they're awesome. I love my teas. it sounds so self-indulgent, but I love my teas and I drink them every single day.
Well, I think they're very important, especially herbal teas. Like a lot of people overlook like Ayurvedic medicines, like Indian medicine. Like, you know, like a tea I like to drink is like holy basil or Tulsi tea.
Tulsi,
you
know,
yeah, like a lot of people are kind of used to drinking like just the processed teas with like all types of flavorings and all types of crazy stuff in it. You know what I mean? But a lot of people overlook organic and like herbal and teas that actually like benefit you spiritually and mentally. Yes. You know?
Yeah. And I actually do tea ceremonies because when I'm doing one on Saturday, it's a shamanic drumming ceremony meditation with a tea ceremony that kind of wraps it up. And we also do tea ceremonies, as a group. It's Keraton's Grove, which is a moon weaver circle. So we do those around the full moon. And the tea is an integral part of it. And so we use the tea to infuse our spirit. We use the tea to heal us physically. We use it to connect with spirit and to connect with the elements. And if you think about it, tea incorporates all the elements, you know, from the plants that come out of the ground to the heat of water that brews the tea. Yeah, yeah. The water itself, to the air that carries the aroma and the essences that come off the tea into your nasal cavity. It is everything in one. And
yeah, I never really thought about that before. Yeah, like the earth, air, water, fire elements within the tea.
Absolutely. Yeah. And ironically, I'm drinking my tea tonight out of a little baby cauldron. So
awesome. That's awesome. That's great.
And a couple of years ago when I was actually at the Pagan Pride Festival and I saw you give a talk on tea in itself, you mentioned several brewing methods from sun brew, the cold brew, hot brew. I think you mentioned like percolating like 3 or 4 years ago now.
Moon brew, yeah.
But when it comes to the brew method you choose for your type of tea, is there a significance for if you're going to be doing like a ceremony or if it's something you're going to be, you know, just enjoying yourself or what are the significance behind these different brewing methods and what they're used for?
Okay. Well, normally my typical everyday brew is just a straight infusion. So that's just boiling the water and pouring it over the leaves and steeping it, depending on the tea, anywhere from 1 minute up to 10 minutes. Now, if I'm going to do a ritual, then I tend to like to use moon brewed water or moon infused water or moon brewed tea. So, especially if it's like inner circle stuff, more private personal stuff, because not only is the water infused with the moon, but if you brew the tea under the moon, then everything gets, it just soaks up the magic of the moon and it becomes intensified. But then there's also, you know, decoctions where you can stuff a bunch of herbs in some water and stick it in the refrigerator for a couple of days and let it get really strong. So I brew so many different ways, you know, cold brew, hot, you name it.
Yeah, the whole spectrum.
But I love incorporating the sun and the moon into brewing as much as possible.
Okay. Yeah. Also, as well, in terms of, I know you've mentioned a few of the tools that you use in the kitchen for the magic. And is there like a comprehensive, maybe like basic tools that people who are starting out in this area would need? Like, I know it's probably kind of common sense, but there's like any like maybe like a list of basic tools that you would suggest for someone starting out on that path.
Okay. Well, I always recommend a good teapot with a strainer. And if you can't get a good teapot with a strainer, then a simple mug with a fine mesh strainer and a pot on the stove is perfectly fine. You really don't have to go fancy with tea. Yeah. Tea is so another one of those very fundamental, very basic things that you don't have to overthink. And I know there's a lot of charts out there where, oh, you know, you have to brew this tea at this degrees and this tea at this degrees. You really don't have to. You don't have to go that complicated. I think we like to make things too complicated, but we really don't have to. If you boil the water, pour it over, and let it steep to your taste, then you've got a good cup of tea. And the herbs are going to infuse into that water and make that water something amazing, either for health or for ceremony or just for general enjoyment.
Yeah, and I also know for a lot of like magic rituals, there, you know, like a lot of people incorporate astrological aspects of things. Like, do you care about like, you know, the certain hours of the day that align with certain planets and this and that, and this is in that house, and certain days of the week to make this and that, or you just kind of go a little more basic than that and just kind of do as you feel?
I am so bad with astrology.
Yeah, a lot of people get really serious with the whole ritual aspect.
I basically go off intuition. So, you know, I stand in front of my teas every morning and go, who wants to be drank today, you know?
Yeah. You're not really sitting outside with the telescope analyzing the entire sky. No. Someone make a 13. No.
That's just too much.
Yeah.
The lavender.
Cool, perfect. I know we talked about the kitchen magic and the dragon magic, and but like, can you explain to us some of the more common spells or rituals or ceremonies to perform, and possibly what purpose they serve?
Okay. Let's see. I think prosperity ones are big. I know, you know, just cycling through different people I work with, like prosperity is a big ticket in spell work. So, you know, I even created a tea and an incense for it because I think we all need a little prosperity, right? We all need a little boost here and there. And so, rituals.
Be like three cups of that.
Yeah. Give me the whole pot.
Yeah, maybe some for later.
And yeah, so I brew teas specific to needs. So when I am doing a tea ceremony, a tea ritual, or even cooking it towards a purpose, like it's always going to be geared towards that purpose. So I always use prosperity because we can all relate to it. But some of the other common things that we work on, you know, are transitions, spiritual transitions. So we're going from what we know now into the unknown of what's coming. And that can be scary sometimes. So having that magical bridge, or, you know, almost like a soft, warm blanket around you to make that transition is something that I do often. Of course, working with shadow work is something I do often. I think that's always an ongoing process.
And just to clarify, like shadow work, at least your terms of it, that's kind of like delving into your psyche or subconscious.
The Jungian psychology and that sort of thing. Yeah.
And just kind of working out in our issues of traumas and kind of discovering, unraveling. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And discovering parts of ourselves. I have a belief that we need to find that balance. We need to embrace our light and dark. And that's when we become really powerful, when we know who we are truly. So doing the shadow work, And a lot of it incorporates the Jungian psychology and just trying to decipher the messages we grew up with of, oh, you're too loud, but that was not something that was bad. You know, trying to come to terms with that you're too loud doesn't mean you're too loud, it just means you are expressive. So your expressive side of you means that you have something to say and you should be allowed to say that. And you know, coming to terms with stuff like that so that you're not suppressing parts of yourself that can help you in the long run. So rituals around really self-discovery are pretty common. in my little bubble here.
That's really good. That's really good. I think even for like the common person, like with the, from the Jungian aspect, I've read a lot of his works, and especially his archetypes in the mind, and how you know the shadow is so prevalent. A lot of people avoid it. A lot of people are afraid of their own darkness, and how like our subconscious can rule our entire destiny, and we think that we're directing it when really our demons or our shadow or our subconscious are directing it. And like until we bridge that gap and really see it and work it out and own it, and integrate it, we don't control our own destiny. So even for like the layperson. Definitely good practice to do.
Absolutely. And if an advice to anybody who is either starting to work with dragon entities and dragon magic, they will require you to own your stuff. You cannot hide from them. You cannot deceive them. They see through you. So you have to face your shadows and you have to face your light. You know, you can't go too far either way. You can't be all happy, bubbly, because that's just a facade. You can't be, you know, over here in the trenches and the trenches and sulking and
murders.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like psychopath over here.
Kidnapping people. Yeah, it's okay.
You have to come to that center. You have to come to that balance. And you know, it's funny because when you start working with dragon energy and serpentine entities, you start realizing like how much this echoes throughout the world in many different religions and many different places, you know, from Kundalini practices, you know, down to the serpents that show up in the Celtic Isles where there were no serpents. You know, you have all this amazing epiphanies going, wow, they're everywhere. This is something here. And when you start working with that energy, that big, big energy, they want you to own yourself. You need to be authentic. You need to be who they know you are, because they know you better than you know yourself sometimes. It's a little scary.
Yeah, no, I bet. Yeah, like even like Indian culture, I think it was like, I don't know how they pronounce it, but like Quetzalcoatl, like that was a big prominent entity and being back then. Yeah, there's definitely something to it. You know, it's been in our subconscious and art forms in a long time from now.
Mm-hmm.
But, in terms of how do you utilize meditation and grounding or contemplation and a lot of these those lines in your practices as like a staple, or is that something you kind of use on the side?
I love that question, because I think as a culture, meditation has become very westernized, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but the true intention of meditation is an Eastern philosophy. Same with karma. Like we take things from the Eastern philosophies and we put our own Western spin on them. And I could not get fully into meditation. I've tried for years. I've tried all kinds of different ways and it never quite resonated with me. So as far as meditation go, I actually do better engaging in journey work. And I know a lot of people ask me, well, what's the difference? To me, meditation is
more active, one's passive, right?
Yeah. Yeah. One's more passive and one's more very interactive. And meditation in how I understand it and how I've learned and what I've learned about it, it is more of the act of controlling the mind, where journey work, you're allowing your mind to explore. You're allowing your mind to tap into things, so that it can find those divine presence. You know, meditation in general is about finding divinity and connecting with divinity. But journey work is about communicating and interacting with that divinity. So you find yourself on a forest path and you're led to a clearing where somebody's waiting for you to speak with you. And it's a divine message. Maybe it's your higher self. Maybe it's another deity that wants to work with you. You know, maybe it's an energy that has a message for you that needs to be said. You know, it could be, you know, you're changing jobs or you're about to have a baby and you need some clarity on something. To me, journey work gives me more of that definitive guidance, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so I guess overall, like, you know, me personally, I use meditation like daily, but I also incorporate contemplation to it, you know, whereas meditation is a good way to, you know, kind of like dissolve the thoughts a little bit and slow down the mind and kind of connect to the source a little bit. And then, you know, things might arise from your subconscious, and you can then focus on those things and contemplate on those things when in a meditative state. So I guess you're almost kind of doing meditation with your eyes open or actively and just using contemplation, I guess. I guess it's just like another avenue for you to do the same type of thing.
Yeah. And I do that often too, you know, just sitting and being in silence.
Yeah.
You know, no phone, no computer, no stimulus, just sit in silence. Let yourself just decompress. And that's something I don't think we do enough in our society is decompress. We think we are, but we're playing a game on our phone or we're surfing Facebook or, you know, whatever. And it's not teaching us anything.
Yeah, it's more of a distraction, and it's kind of scary because like I kind of feel like, you know, even speaking to a lot of people, they don't do this stuff at all, and I'm used to it, but it's also a scary thing. But you know, you get a lot out of it. But I feel like if a lot of people truly just out of nowhere just start sitting in a room by themselves, like they probably feel like they're going crazy, or like all the things they've done wrong, or like the aspects of life or existence. Yeah. Like I feel it would be too heavy for them. Like for a lot of people's stages in life, because they've discarded or, you know, it's kind of repressed so many things.
Oh, And that goes back to dealing with that shadow.
Yep. Yeah, it's definitely, it's a pretty scary world to delve into, but it's essential.
It is.
And you classify yourself as a witch, right? Like not Wiccan or any of those other things, right?
No, and I started off as Wiccan. I studied as Wiccan, but as I got older and I started understanding things differently, and seeing things through a different lens, the classification of witch just makes better sense for me.
Can you quick explain maybe the differences between Wicca and witchcraft, and maybe why you kind of lean towards witchcraft instead?
Yeah. Well, to me, Wicca is, it's more structured. So it's, you know, the way I was trained, I was trained in high magic. So it is very structured. So think of your Catholic mass. And it, you have a time and a place for everything. You have, you know, the high priestess there, you have the high priest there, and they do this. You have your summoner here, and they do this. You have your gatekeeper here, and they do this.
It's very ceremonial.
Ceremonial, very structured. And there's a reason for that. And I love the reason for that, because when you are in that, when you practice a certain process over and over again, you know what comes next. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to question it. So you can drop into connecting the spirit much more easily when you know that, you know what's coming next. You know A, B, C, D, all the way to Z. You don't have to think, oh God, what's coming next? And that's why the ceremonial magic structure is so important, I think, especially for beginners, because it gives you that sense of discipline. It gives you that hierarchy that helps you learn and grow. Looking at in the contrast to witchcraft, it's a lot more freeform. You know, it's more being able to go out, sit under a tree, and if a need arises, all of a sudden you're in the throes of magic. You don't have to cast the circle. You don't have to have the special tools. You don't have to have the special robes or the incense or the candles. You are there instantly. And to me, that's some of the difference. There's no dogma in with the witchcraft thing. You don't have a reed that dictates what you can and cannot do. It is very open and very free.
So do you feel like it's important then to like, you know, because like a lot less ceremonial magic, I'm more of a ceremonial magic type of person. And though it's each their own, doesn't matter to me. Something that's important there is like maybe like the lesser banishing ritual, the pentagram, or else, you know, using a circle as protection, or, you know, divine names, you know, within the pentagrams, you know, all that stuff like that. Do you think it's important for people to use protection just from your own point of view in terms of like casting circles or, you know, LBRP, or like, do you incorporate any of that stuff into your practice ever? Or do you think it's okay to just go about what you're doing, as long as you feel good with what you're doing without any type of, I guess, formal protection?
I think it depends on the situation, because I do know that there are entities out there that want to use your energy for their own purposes. May they be human, may they be ethereal. You know, there are entities out there that want to use your energy, especially if you're going into some sort of psychic communication. like channeling or card reading or something like that, you're trying to push, you know, you're poking your fingers through that veil. So yeah, you want to make sure that you're protected in that sense. Now, I think if you are, you know, I use this one as a funny example because it happened to me. I was in the grocery store and, you know, I was thinking, hey, wouldn't it be nice to have a great steak dinner? But for some reason, I didn't feel like preparing it. So I grabbed like fried chicken or, you know, whatever that was quick and easy because it was like 8 o'clock at night. Nobody had eaten. We all needed to eat. So I was grabbing stuff real quick. So that type of manifestation, me thinking, hey, I would really like this. And the next day, having my mother-in-law take us out to a steak dinner, that I don't think needs protection. That is, you know, that it happened, and it does happen quite often. You know, the hat that my mother-in-law brought me today, I was looking at them online, like, oh, those are so cute. I would love to have one of those little hats. And ta-da, here it is. So there's certain magic that I don't think need the high magic. They don't need the high ritual. They don't need the big circles and that sort of thing. Now, if you're going into a trance, if you're going to, you know, perform a ritual where there's many people around, maybe that I think needs a little more protection because there's so much going on that you can't dip your finger in through the veil and expect to come out with, you know, glitter and butterflies.
Yeah, every time, right?
Every single time. Yeah. And that's not to say, and I don't like to scare people because I don't want people thinking that, oh God, there's something out there to get you every single time. There's not. And
it just can't be, right? Just like real life. You know,
yeah, right? You know, right. You know, you could be walking down the street and, you know, or driving your car and get sideswiped by a car. That's not necessarily meaning that they wanted to injure you. It's just, it happened, you know?
It's almost like it's good to like protect yourself in the material realm, maybe with like a gun or like pepper spray or like whatever it might be to protect yourself. And if you're going to deal with the astral or evoking or invoking anything, it might be best to use some type of protection, like a spiritual protection, I'm assuming, right?
And then there's all different types, you know, like there's all different types of physical protection. Like I'm not going to walk down a dark alley at midnight without something. You know, especially being female, you know, maybe I bring my daughter with me, who's a second degree black belt or something like that.
Yeah, you know? That's great.
You know, I really think we covered a lot here today. You know, Leandra, thank you so much for coming out and being on the show. For our listeners who are interested in learning more about you or purchasing your books or maybe exploring the idea of your coven in itself, how can they reach out to you? How can they find you? How do they do these things?
Well, I'm on Instagram at Leandra Witchwood. I'm also on Facebook. So I think I'm the only Leandra Witchwood out there, which is nice. So it's easy to find me. I think the best way to find me is leandrawitchwood.com because that'll direct you to the coven page, the Witchwood Tea House, the Magic Kitchen, and our events calendar where we hold our Moonweaver circles and our Calling the Flame circles and all the other events that we have going on.
Yeah, and honestly, your website is absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. I designed that. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, you did.
Yes. Really? Yeah.
I was talking to CJ before we came on today. I was like, man, her website is beautiful. Like, it's like laid out amazing. Like the font, the text, the style, like the way the tabs are. Like it's extremely organized. So like, yeah, the fact that you actually created that yourself, like that's amazing.
That's awesome.
I really mean it. I definitely really mean it.
Thank you. Yeah,
you're doing a lot of good things out here, and I really appreciate it.
I thank you for having me. I'm honored to be on here, and this has been fun.
Is there anything else maybe you have for the listeners, or for just anything else you want to express or say, or you think that's pretty much pretty much good?
We're good, but I honestly I want to tell everybody out there, especially newbies. I'm not going to call you baby witches. I don't like that term, but newbies out there, like, do your own thing. Like, do what feels right. Don't think that you have to have all the expensive tools or all the expensive clothes or all the aesthetics. It's all show until you can tap into your soul and just let it go and be free and do the things that you feel are right. And, you know, it's personal. It's got to be personal.
Yes, I mean, yeah, just dig deep, find yourself, and align yourself with whatever you find.
Absolutely.
All right. Once again, thank you very much. I really, really appreciate your time. It's been an honor. So thank you.
Really, thank you so much. And thank everybody you. Listening, if you're at all interested in anything Leandra has talked about at all, we're going to have links in the description. We'll have a link to her website. You'll be able to find that. If you could subscribe, leave a review for Leandra. She's got a YouTube channel. It's awesome.
I do.
You know, tell your friends, you know, listen more. We love it. And we love you guys. I guess that's it for us. Once again, Leandra, thank you so much for being out here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yep. Of course.
All right. And I guess that's it for us, guys. Blessed be.
All right.
Blessed be.